Welcome to this special edition of the Fumble Rooski podcast. We have a very special guest joining us today, a former safety for the Tennessee Titans, Pro Bowl, four-time Pro Bowler, one-time All-Pro, was part of the Tennessee Titans that made it to the Super Bowl, and one of the classic eighth-round picks turning into an absolute legend type of story. We have ourselves Blaine Bishop. Blaine, thank you for joining the show today.
Appreciate it, guys, man. Fumble Rooski. Yes.
Yeah.
It's used all over the place. I love that name, man. Thanks for having me on, man. It's going to be fun.
I can't wait. I'm very excited that you're here with us today, especially for a guy. We'll just get right into it. I mean, I mentioned already, you were an eighth round pick, 214th pick in the 1993 draft from the then Houston Oilers. Yesterday was cut day for the NFL. So you were fortunate enough to have made the Houston Oilers roster back in 93. Mm-hmm. But I would assume that you had a little bit of doubts that you were going to make the team. Talk to me about what you were feeling back then and what some of these guys are feeling right now.
Oh, man, I was a nervous wreck. And, you know, back then, you know, we would go to another school. I was at Trinity University in San Antonio, and they would knock on the door of, you know, the guys at the dorm and, you know, tell them they're being released, bring your playbook to, you know, to meet with the coach. And, you know, you just kind of hear that periodically, you know, guys around you. So it was really difficult. I thought it was going to come down to the wire for me. I got a lot of breaks along the way, though. A couple guys got injured, really kind of helped elevate me. And then I got to prove myself with that happening. So yeah, I didn't feel secure, but I felt like I had a great shot. I know early on in camp, though, before cuts really happened, you know, being from Ball State, Indiana, you know, people in Texas are like, where the heck is that? I mean, they didn't have any idea, so they thought I couldn't play, and that I had no shot of making the team. So kind of proving yourself and proving your worth and finding that niche where you can fit in. And I thought at the time was going to be practice squad. Then I start gaining confidence that, oh, okay, maybe just a special teamer, and maybe I contribute that way. And then once I get an opportunity in the field. So as time went on, I kept gaining more and more confidence. And then I, you know, before cut day, I really felt like I had a great shot of making it. But there was definitely doubt. The NFL was something that was totally different as far as the talent, the impact of hitting. I mean, it was just a whole different ball game. And, you know, it was probably the first time I ever doubted, like, this may be the last time I play football. It was the first time it ever crossed my mind. It had never, ever crossed my mind before. Not one iota. It crept in a doubt. I remember having a conversation with my mother, and I was like, man, this is probably the hardest thing I've ever done. And she says, oh, shit, this is not targeting you. What the hell do you have to lose? Nobody even thinks you can play anyway. Just give it your best shot. And guess what? You'll be able to live with that. And if not, you move on to plan B. And already I'd had a State Farm job that I'd interviewed and got a job at insurance.
There you go.
My $35,000 job at the time. I would have been probably an owner of some, you know, nice plug there for State Farm.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah, so that's where it took me, though. That's how hard and how talented the players were. And I was a corner at the time. So I was a nickel guy and then eventually got moved to safety during that training camp with guys tearing ACLs, Achilles. That's what I said. There's a lot of breaks and opportunities. Got to be in the right place, right time. And for me, even though I was a draft pick, I was the last round. We all know the last round guy, you know, being the 214th pick, which still exists today, you know, more picks now than ever before. But you know, you're not invincible from getting cut being the last round, because usually the fine line between you and an undrafted guy or you and a guy that went fifth round, and it's all about preference and scheme fit. So I really thought that was a huge mistake made, and I came into camp with a huge chip on my shoulder, really pissed off, to be honest, because, you know, I start seeing guys go in the draft that you know, I was pretty aware of how good I was and how good I wasn't and who was better than me. And I thought I should have went, you know, fourth, fifth round. They start, you know, calling guys I had never heard of. Like, so I was really perturbed. I really was. So it went from mini camp that I was running around like a banshee to training camp where I got, you know, busting my mouth. And now it's about, okay, with these full pads on, how are you going to respond?
Yeah. You mentioned, like, you know, the awareness of how you felt like you were better than a lot of those guys in the draft and whatnot. I remember watching the short video that the Tennessee Titans had posted. It was about your draft day story. And you were talking about how the Oilers had called you up and said that they were going to take you in the fifth round and proceeded to then not take you in the fifth round, but then ended up taking you in the eighth round anyways. That must have been a bit of a, what's the word I'm looking for? Must have been kind of a crackback on you.
Well, you know, I always feel like the man upstairs always has a plan, and never goes according to plan. It goes according to his plan. And so that was just another chip that I needed to put there, because I would use any motivating tools in anything that I did to be successful. And, that chip got bigger. And so when they told me that and then they didn't take me after that, I left my apartment. And, you know, a couple of my buddies that were there with me, they left as well, because we all had to go do stuff and I had to go study for a test. And I was like, looks like I need to pass this test because I need to make sure I graduate, you know. So,
yeah.
Those aside, I was just a little perturbed. So I went to we have a Bracken library, went to an area where I could just study. And I didn't even pay attention to the draft after that, to be honest. And then they called me back and I was still there at the library. And I said that I wasn't at home and that you guys had called me before and said you're going to take me, didn't take me. So I believe it when I see it. I was just kind of that guy. And so I wasn't worried about it. My agent called me and said, hey, look, it may be better off that you not get drafted and be a free agent. You kind of can choose your place where you want to go. He didn't know what was going on, but he had no idea that something like this could even happen. I got back to the house and there it was. They said, you'll be on the ticker. So I was on the ticker. So I didn't actually see when they actually picked me. I just saw it on the ticker going across when I got back to the apartment. But yeah, I was elated to get drafted, but it was a kind of a sombering because I was there by myself. And, you know, it was just like, okay, this is just one step, but this is the beginning step. And so, that was kind of an interesting. I would love to hear some of the guys' draft story, even if you went second or third round, the expectations of what they thought would happen than how they actually felt, because it's a relief, but all at the same time, it's also now it's time to get to work. The work is just beginning. And that's kind of how I approached it, especially after that happened, because I was just as stunned, and I wasn't the type to go around, oh, I'm going third. I knew what was going on around me, and I was kind of a fourth, fifth guy pretty much locked in. Once you start getting into the sixth, seventh round, now the guys are pretty much graded the same. And now it's about which player you really like the best just from film, you know, or interviews or something like that. So, yeah, it was actually great that actually happened, because I had straight chip and attitude that was, okay, every time we step on the field, I'm proving something. And it never changed. Even as I became a starter, all the way through. Yeah.
I like it. CJ, you want to take the reins on this one?
Yeah, there is something that I was wondering. Let's kind of peek more into your mentality here, because you first started with, you know, being an eighth round pick after being told you're going to the fifth round. Then you roll up to play for the Oilers down in Houston. And then you said at first you weren't confident, you know, you had a job with State Farm. And my question was there like a turning point for you? As you said, like in camp, your confidence grew. And there was a point where by the time roster cutdown day loomed, you thought to yourself, yeah, I could very well make this roster. Like I'm feeling confident. Like what was behind that boost of confidence? Like if there was a turning point, what really was it that really boosted your confidence that made you say, I'm going to be a Houston Oiler and I'm going to be on this team week one? Right.
Yeah. Well, I would say this. I didn't lose confidence. I gained, I would say, an attitude that not why did this happen? Now I'm about to prove you why it shouldn't have happened. That is kind of my approach. And the reason why it was that way, I was used to things like that happening. So I was very fortunate. When I told you guys, when I got recruited out of high school, I was all state, all city, all the things you could be. And guess what? Everybody said I couldn't play Division I football, even my head coach. And I went to a Division II program. So that's one time. And guess what? That was devastating. I mean, devastating. That was the one, because that was my dream. I just wanted to play Division I football. I didn't even care where it was at. I would just want to play Division I to prove to myself that I was a Division I player, because I thought I was. And I ain't go around talking about it. I thought I was. Anybody I played against that they said were, you know, big prospects, yeah, I was like, okay, let's see. When we play, we're going to see. And so that was one devastation. I mean, I cried in high school when that happened. And then I said, okay, my mom then said, once again, well, you guess one thing about sports? Actions always proves right. So if you go out there and show that you do deserve, then everything else will take care of itself. And that was always something I could lean into her on, those things, because she knew me better than anybody and she knew how to push the right buttons. So I went up there in a Division II and made Division II All-American, played both sides of the ball, running back, defensive back, return kicks, punts. And guess what happened at that Division II program? Something that really transformed my career. After one of the games when I scored four touchdowns, two as a running back, two as a defensive back, one as a returner, NFL scouts, the Jets and the Giants after that game said, you got a shot at the National Football League. Literally 4 months after I wasn't a Division I prospect. So my confidence was never going to waver after that. And I didn't even know if it was true or not. They were there to watch somebody else on the other team. And so after that is when I went to my high school coach, and then that's what got me to Ball State. And so from that point on, I was on the NFL's radar from that point on. I mean, they would tell me 20 teams are there to watch me play at Ball State. And I'm like, why did you tell me? They're like, well, you would have played any different. I mean, so I was somewhat on a mission in a good way. And yeah, I could kind of even take you out, because the rules were different then. I had to sit out, so they used it as a red shirt, because you couldn't, even though I was moving up, you still couldn't play immediately, which you can do now. And so I practiced every position known to man, whether, you know, the best team on the other teams, but, you know, I play option quarterback, running back, defensive back, it didn't matter. And so after that, I was a walk-on, by the way. And after that first semester, they gave me a full scholarship, and they said, you can be third string running back, or you can compete to start a cornerback. And I looked at the coach and I said, I mean, like, I look back on myself as an 18, 19 year old guy saying this to a coach. I don't know how he took it out, but I was serious as a heart attack when he said, you know, and I loved running back. That was my passion. That was my passion. I thought I was a running back, but I wasn't dumb enough, like, third string and compete to start. What I said to the coach, it was the DC. I looked at him and said, compete with who? Man, he looked at me and said, and that, you know, they called me, my nickname was Woody. Woody, don't worry about it. We'll take care of that. Because what was really even put more chips on my shoulder, even at that time, they had two cornerbacks starting that were recruited out of high school the same year I came out of high school. They were from Kentucky.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, hey, nothing against those guys, but they ain't me. But I didn't say that. I did not say that. That would have been a little more kind. But in my mind, that's what I was saying to them. Like, who am I competing with? So from that point on, I knew I was only competing with myself, and I was going to press myself to the limit. And everywhere I've gone, whether it was middle school, grade school, high school, college, pro, I was a captain and a leader. Those don't happen by accident. So I was self-motivated, self-driven. There was nothing that was going to get in my way from what I was trying to achieve. And if it ended, guess what? I can say I gave it all I got. And that becomes an issue with some guys. They think that's who defines them and who they are. That's just something that I did and wanted to show that I could do it. And then life moves on.
You mentioned your nickname from high school, Woody. You also had another nickname during your playing days, the Hitman. tell me about the origin of that one.
Well, that one started, you know, what's so funny? It kind of started in college there at Ball State. And it got just kind of, I don't know how, they just start calling me that in the pros. I think I just started hitting everything that moved, and because I didn't know what else to do. And
it's a damn good nickname, that's for sure.
It really is.
We were talking about it earlier. We're like, that's so sick. Like, imagine
that. I don't even know how I really got. I can't even. I remember I had Hitman on the back of my Letterman jacket, and because one of the teammates gave it to me, and I really didn't believe I was a big hitter. As I said, I was a cornerback. So, but for a cornerback, I would say I was an aggressive player. When I got to the pros and they start calling me, they didn't know that that was what people called me in college. It happened because I felt like that was the only way I had I said, you got to find a niche. I thought me being a smart player and just going around hitting guys was my way of, you know, setting a tone. And so then they start calling me Hitman. I was not a hitter like that in college. So in the pros, you know, at safety, I got to get a running start, and I was like, hey man, when I finish, they gonna say, hey man, this dude right here, man, this guy plays hard. And that I was gonna leave it on the field. Like, every play was my last play, and I mean, man, it was gonna be my last play. That was it. I was in phenomenal condition, and my backdrop of my story, a lot of people don't know, I don't talk about this a lot, I was a big time swimmer, and I wanted to be an Olympic swimmer. Growing up. So I swam a lot. I was on freestyle, 3 meter board, breaststroke champion. I did that continuously through college and the pros. Mm-hmm. And so I never got tired. I would do these routines in the pool for my workout, and it just in the off season. So that was like my crypt, you know, that was became my man. That was my strength there. I never got tired.
That I can't imagine the conditioning you must have had. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. I mean, I got tired, but I was never like that because, you know, I'd be talking to guys, I'd be calling out plays, I'd be yelling at people. I mean, it was, you know, it was just something that was embedded in me. I, you know, to be honest, I just love football. I really did. I didn't even set goals when I made it to the league. I never did. I always just wanted to be the best version of what the God gifts was given to me, and I was going to give it all I got. And I probably would have played for nothing like I was in college. But, you know, so it was just kind of – I loved the game. You know, I was still a fan, but playing the game. And that's how a lot of people kind of gravitated to me and the fans, because when you see me, I'm not a big opposing guy. I'm a lot bigger than I am now, but like, I wasn't a big guy. Like, so it's just like, dang, man, that guy there, he's really cool. He's down to earth. He's easy to talk to. And I felt like I was one of them, but I was on the field and I represented everywhere I've come from the projects to then elevating and my mom getting a good job and then going to a private school. To then St. Joe's, the college. So I knew a vast array of people. And every time I stepped on the field, I represented them. Anybody who came in contact with me, they definitely, when they called me Woody at the stadium, I knew they knew me.
I guess we can use Woody as another segue into the Titans and whatnot. Going into 99 per se, or just 99 and 2000, those two seasons, 99, you guys make it to the Super Bowl, and I don't think people realize how much around the field you were during that postseason run. Mm-hmm. And I, in terms of Tennessee lore, they think of the AFC divisional round as the Blaine Bishop game, or at least according to this video on the Tennessee Titans. You got the Music City Miracle. Yeah. Beating the Jags a third time and Blaine Bishop ruining Peyton Manning and the Colts.
Hey, that man, I had that game there. I know a lot of people say, oh man, the Super Bowl, but that game there, because it was in Indianapolis, We had won state on that field before in high school, by the way, where I had two picks. And I felt like I was at home. And man, I never felt like that anywhere else. And it was, here's the reason why, though. It wasn't just because it was in Indianapolis. I'm running around the field, you know, in warmups, you know, when you're out there by yourself. Just, you know, nobody, no team. You know, I'm out there early doing my warmups by myself. You know, different guys out there doing the different stuff for both teams on either side. It didn't really matter. And I see our chaplain when I was in high school at Cathedral High School. And he is the chaplain for the Indianapolis Colts. And so we stand there and talk. We have this long, and I was really close with him, Father Kelly. He's no longer with us. And the lasting thing he said to me, which really helped me relax and play like that, he said, man, who would have thought? You know, everybody calls me Blaine Bishop. I'm in the league now. And I just told you guys what my nickname was. Mm-hmm. He said, man, who would have thought Woody would have made it to the National Football League? And we laugh, and I'm laughing while I'm talking to him, and I just bust out laughing. I said, not even Woody would have thought he would have made it to the NFL. I went third person on him, and we just busted out laughing, you know, and hugged each other. And because we knew, man, that there was no way, and Sam, you know what, that anybody thought that I would have been on an NFL team. And we had parade All-Americans on our team, by the way, that we won state that year. Derek Brawlow got fourth round, and they were a couple years older than me. Morris Gardner went third round to the Falcons. So we had some dudes, and I was never the best player on my team in high school. Yeah, so it was just for him to say that and then to go out there and play I didn't realize it till after the game. Head coach Fisher said that that was the best totality game that I played in my career, from passing to, you know, rushing to blitzing to everything. And I didn't think it was. I was just like, yeah, it was just another game to me. He said, nah, this one was special. And so I want to believe the coach. And after I watched the tape, I was like, well, he may have something there. So yeah, that was fun. And then, you know, we had just got to Tennessee. I didn't realize, you know, I understood what Peyton Manning was as a player, but, you know, what he meant to the state of Tennessee and what he did at University of Tennessee. So that would always go down as a big one for me. Yeah, but he was young in his career, though. They were really good. They, you know, they had the edge. They had Marcus Pollard, the tight end, Dilger, and let's not talk about Reggie Wayne, who should be in the Hall of Fame, as well as Marvin Harrison, who is. So they had a heck of a
That was like the real beginning of when the Colts were like that offense was really starting to catapult
to rev up. Yeah. So we caught them early there, but yeah, they definitely it was all handled. We matched up really well, that our defense with their weapons, the type of corners we had there. So yeah.
Oh yeah. I mean, if we were looking at some of the stats from that defense in general, you guys only allowed like 11 points per game. I mean, I'm thinking of 2000, but like that, if you guys didn't have to run into the Ravens, guys probably would have gone down as well. Oh, that pain.
Probably,
no doubt about it. I think when we played them the next year in the playoffs, which we were the two best teams in the National Football League, everybody knew that, and not just on the AFC side, our offense scored three times as much yards as theirs did, and they won because of the turnovers and the missed field goals. So it's kind of where the cookie crumbles there. But that actually season, that 2000 season, is the one that pains me more than anything. Everybody thinks it's a Super Bowl loss, but it was really to the Rams, but it was really the Ravens loss, because that year, you know, we gained that confidence that we were really good as we went along that season. But that 2000 season, we knew we were good, and we knew we were going to win a Super Bowl, because everybody was back and we were hungry because we had lost to the Rams, and who we beat in the regular season, which doesn't count, you know, getting the Super Bowl. Greatest show on turf. They were phenomenal. And so, that next year, we were dominant. We were dominant on defense. It was the best team I probably played on. You know, we got McNair, Eddie George, Derek Mason, Dyson, Whitecheck, Bruce Matthews. We had dudes all over the place. That didn't even count the defense.
CJ, you had a Super Bowl question?
Yeah, actually, I do. So So here's the thing. So, you know, you go to the Super Bowl, you don't win. That's just absolute heartbreaker. But then I want to know, like, what motivated you from that Super Bowl? Because obviously I do believe it lit a fire under you, considering the very next year you were second team all pro in the NFL on year 2000. So yeah. What lessons did you take from that?
Oh, man. And it's funny. You know what? No one has ever asked me that. And I'm glad you did, because I wanted to come back to be the best version I'd ever been in the National Football League after that loss to the Rams. So I trained, because we had injuries going into that game on defense, and we really had backup corners out there, and we were trying to do man-to-man. There was no way we were going to do that against the greatest show term. So I wanted to come back where I could cover any of them, Isaac Bruce, it didn't matter. So I trained totally different. I was doing all this track work, and that kind of was the motivating factor. And this was, you know, people think, you know, you can get another shot at the Super Bowl. You don't never know. Guess what? Bruce Matthews played 19, 20 years living. I called him the living legend. Only played in that one Super Bowl. So, and then I know guys that played 2 years and got two Super Bowl rings, and that was it. You know, so you just never know when you get that opportunity. And also, I got injured in that game in the fourth quarter. So there were a lot of factors there to come back bigger, better, stronger, just better all-around player. I thought I did do that. Yeah, because the next year when we lost to the Ravens, I had to be man-to-man with Shannon Sharpe a lot in that game. And go back and watch that tape, see how well I did.
I mean, you guys just had an incredible rivalry with the Ravens in general that entire season.
Yeah.
I remember seeing the America's Game documentary on the NFL Network when for the 2000 Ravens, and they were talking about how much they hated you guys too.
Yeah.
Great television. Thank you for being a part of that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they were phenomenal defense, and we had different styles as far as how we approached things. They were kind of the, you know, the guy that do all the talking and the barking and everything in us. And we were more situated where we wanted to make sure we stay professional, but at the same time, we got on that football field, all that talking is over. And plus, we didn't play their actual defense. Our defense could not play their defense. So we had to play their offense, and they had some really good players. So we wanted to respect them, but at the same time, when we get out, we're gonna run around and we're gonna do what we do and let our actions do the talking. And that was kind of our way. So it's different styles, but we were the same team on the football field, no question about it.
100%. Let's start getting into some Titans in modern day NFL. So obviously Titans had one of the worst records in the league last year, or the worst, end up with number one pick. And they get Cam Ward.
Yeah.
Let's just start with your opening thoughts about Cam Ward, because there was a lot of talk about him not being a good leader after the Miami Bowl game. He gets drafted, and it seems that whole narrative has switched. So what have you seen from Cam Ward so far?
Well, I don't know what you're referring to in the narrative, because he didn't play or he left.
He got a lot of backlash for not playing in the second half.
That didn't really bother me, because personally, just watching from afar, looking back on it after that had happened. And that is because of the situation where college football is now. You got a lot to lose there, and he did play for half, then probably just to get the passing records, have you? And I'm sure that conversation happened as the head coach came out and said that conversation did happen beforehand. So that was going to go, you know, be that he was only going to play a half. So yeah, I didn't have an issue with there. But as far as his leadership, I can't say this, and I've been retired for a while now. This guy has all the qualities of a great leader. Not just a good leader. And by the way, I said my resume has a lot of leadership captain on along the way, so I can identify him. He has an old soul, and he's an old school guy. So that's very rare in this generation of players. And just listen to this quote he said one time when I forgot what the question they asked him, but he said his response was, "My dad had a job and got up at 4:30 and didn't enjoy his job." I get up at 4:30 and I love my job. I mean, think about that now. 2025, a kid graduating college saying that, because he gets there like at 5 o'clock a.m. every day. And then he got other people to go there and meet him. He goes out with the defense for dinner. He goes out with the offense. He works with players after practice there. And then he leads by examples, different style, probably with different players. I'm thoroughly and probably more impressed with his leadership style and who he is and what, you know, makes him a really good player more than anything. As far as his arm talent, I would say he's got a really talented arm, but I could say this. He can't throw it further than Will Levis. See that? Because see, sometimes it's not always about the talent and the arm talent. Sometimes it's what's in between the ears. And he's got it. I would say he's a controlled gunslinger. And that's going to be his only test in the National Football League. All righty, controlled gunslinger. Well, what about when things aren't going so well? And we all know this team, as you mentioned, had the number one pick, got to pick you. So all the pieces aren't there. So when you're now trying to put the team on your back, because it really shouldn't be, how will you perform then when you don't have the pieces around you that can help you? So I think then, I think he's going to be a solid starting quarterback in the National Football League, even with the Titans. I don't know if that's going to equate to wins initially this first season, but everything else, he has it. And he has it. What's in between the years, smart guy, and he's devoted to football. That's all he cares about. So he's not worried about all the outside noise and social media and all that. You know, he is an old school playing in the modern era. And that's gonna go a long way in this arena of the National Football League. So he may only turn into just a really good starter in the NFL, but the sky's the limit. But I would say the floor is that's exactly what he'll be. And when that'll start, you know, I don't know. But I don't know if he can elevate this team because I don't know if it's enough pieces, but he's a great dude. And I've been around some great dudes. Marcus Mariota was a great guy, great human being, but he hardly ever spoke. Mm. Yeah, see, it's totally different. Totally different. I mean, Cam Ward, and I think his mom wants him to be called Cameron Ward, and I get it. You know, when I'm a parent. So, I mean, he, like, went after Jeffrey Simmons. Like, uh-oh, wait a minute now, dude. That this dude is strong as an ox. Like, I mean, this is not somebody. He went and pushed him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Like,
big so, boy.
I mean, in a good way, not in a combative way, but like, hey, man, we ain't had it. First of all, I would have said you red jersey quarterback, stay out of that. And he had to, you know, lesson learned, but he's trying to, you know, make sure he's trying to, you know, be on his territory. Let's say that. Yeah. Uh-huh. And so, yeah, and it was a fun thing. So, you know, it became nothing. But yeah, Cam Ward is all that I think they got him for. And I think it was more so not just his arm talent, but his leadership skills. And the organization really needed that. There's a part of me, before I knew anything about Cam Ward, they had so many holes on the team that they should change the pick. Before you know, anything started the process, you know, of any quarterback, like, man, they have so many holes over the last three or four drafts. Most of those guys, they aren't even on the team. So that was a part of me until now I see why they did what they did, because I'm not interviewing him. I'm not sitting down. I'm not going over, you know, who he is and interviewing different coaches and all the different places he went to and all the different things that the coaches are saying about him at different places. You know how hard that is to do? And then to do it in a short window? That was impressive. Yeah. And then to be a no-star coming out. He was just like us.
Yeah, that's right.
All of us was all no-stars.
I forgot all about that.
Maybe you were a two-star quarterback.
No, definitely not. Definitely not.
So, hey, man, this guy, he's earned it. He's put in the work, and he's earned it. And I wish him the best. But the floor is, yeah, he'd just be an average starting quarterback.
Yep.
Jesus, so, man, you got me sold on Cam Ward.
Yeah.
You got me sold on him.
Absolutely.
He's going to go through some ups and downs. It's going to happen. All of them do. We saw Peyton Manning, one of the greatest. They all do. But as you go along, he's going to figure it out. Yeah. I believe that.
Yep. So going from one underrated prospect who really found some footing to another, we want to go back to the past here. One last question before we got to go, because I know you got to go soon. We were wondering about the Super Bowl again. Can you take us through your thought process about watching on that last play, like on the sideline, just watching that last play go down? Can we end with kind of like your thoughts? Like what did you feel like?
Well, first I said I got injured, so I wasn't on the sidelines.
Oh, really?
You didn't come back out onto the sideline? You were still in the locker room?
Yeah, I was watching this. Oh. I was in the MRI machine.
Okay.
Listening to the game.
Oh,
and so, they were cutting my helmet off. Yeah, so I hurt my neck. And so, so I was listening to the game, but, you know, naturally I saw it. So, it was painful. But, you know, plays like that just, you know, it's just like, you know, hit or miss. It's just like, hey, man, we came up short. And by the way, that would only tie the game. I don't know if we would have went for two or not, but yeah. I was so pissed that I wasn't out there. I just, man, because I wanted to go back in the game and they wouldn't let me.
Yeah.
And I'm glad they didn't because, you know, my neck took about 3 months to feel back to normal. So it was no surgery or anything like that, but yeah, I sprained my neck.
Sorry to hear that. We should have looked a little bit more deeply into that.
Well, yeah, I hit somebody like I think it was late third or beginning of the fourth quarter. And I kind of hit them and let alone I kind of knocked myself out. Kind of did. Mm. So I didn't see the last play. I was just listening to it on the radio with all the, doctors and everything. So, yeah.
That's
was tough, though. It was tough. I know it was tough for Dyson, who kind of, you know, I didn't know it kind of bothered him for a while there.
Really?
Yeah, it did.
Even if it was just like such a great defensive play, he still.
That's how I viewed it. But
yeah,
I don't think he did that. Until you're in those situations, do you really know? But there's been a lot of times I'm sure that I missed an interception or I missed a tackle or sack or something, and then it turned into a great play. So, but it wasn't in the Super Bowl. So,
yeah, I guess it's just the whole, you know, he had the ball in his hands and he had a chance, a chance to do something with it.
Yeah, I think that's probably his thought process.
Yeah. Well, Blaine, this has been an absolute pleasure to have you with us today. And thank you for your time. Thank you for your time and joining us as well. This has been, as I mentioned, an absolute pleasure having a guy like you on, and you're an awesome guy to talk to as well. Is there anything you want to plug before we sign off?
No, you just go to 104.5, the Zone app, and listen to me from 1 to 3 Central Time. B Bishop 23 on IG or Blaine Bishop 23 on IG, and X is B Bishop 23. So yeah, go check me out, man, and hopefully you appreciate my story and where I came from.
Awesome. Absolutely. Well, he's CJ Medeiros. I'm Chris Kostich. Thank you for tuning in to another episode or this special edition of the Fumble Rooski podcast. Blaine, thank you again for joining in with us and talking some ball and your career, of course. And we'll see you guys on Tuesday. Over and out.
Appreciate it, guys. Fumble Rooski!